8:02, time to save money at the pump. Text Dave to 83835 now. Save 25 cents a gallon on your second fill up. Save even more down the road when you stack that cash back at all participating Shell gas locations. Dave and Nate, Matt George behind the glass. Katie has the rest of the day off, at least. But she'll be on tonight on the sidelines on your TV broadcast. Don't forget the radio with your Sacramento Kings versus the Washington Wizards this evening. Where are we at now? Is it six in a row for the Kings. And this obviously, you know, never say never, but this obviously looks like a loss for the Kings tonight. That this is a very hot Washington team. This is a team that is surprisingly a game behind the Celtics for the two spot and three behind the Cleveland Cavaliers for the one spot in the East. They've won 7 of 10, and they come in favored by 8 at the old Golden One Center.
All right.
Kings at 25-39. Why is that important to you? If we flip the standings like we enjoy doing, the Kings right now, currently, when it comes to the race for the old lottery balls, the Sacramento Kings are a half a game ahead of the Knicks and a half a game behind the New Orleans Pelicans, which they own their pick as long as it's not in the top three. They're also, both the Pelicans and Magic are idle tonight. They're a game and a half currently of the Magic. So by the end of the night, should the Kings lose, which they are favored to lose, they will be in a tie for the sixth spot with the Pelicans and just one game behind the Orlando Magic.
So in your little inverted standings there, because I'm still having trouble with like sixth place, whatever.
Sure.
What's the ideal range for them?
Here's where it's a problem, and where honestly luck. A lot of this is luck. You can't barrel it down to mathematics. But the ideal place for the Kings, listen, they're 4.5 behind the three spot, which is the Suns, and let's not even talk about the Lakers and Nets in 2-1. So the ideal spot, the Sixers are only 2.5 behind the Suns, and the Suns have been playing better as of late, although they've lost 2 in a row. I think those top three spots are going to be locked down. So right now you have the Sixers right outside that top three. That's fine because, remember, the Sixers have the opportunity to swap. But if the Sixers end up swapping, unless there's some crazy thing going on right now, it's not going to be that far. It's shaping up right now to where the Kings are going to have, odds are, two picks between the 5 and 8 range, let's say. And I think if that happens, I think if they get 5, 6, 6, 7, 7, 8, 5, 8, whatever it may be, I think that's about the best case scenario you could have hoped for.
Right. 5, 6 would probably be the best possible, right?
Well, the best possible mathematically, all bets are off. The best possible would be the Kings would have the 2nd and 4th pick in the draft.
Oh, okay.
The Kings would win the lottery and pick number one. They would swap that with Philadelphia, who would have the number 2 pick, let's say, in this best case scenario. And then they'd have the Pelicans pick at 4 because it's top 3 protected.
Gotcha.
The best they could possibly do is 2 and 4. And as we welcome in Sam Amick of USA Today.
It's not going to happen.
That's where we're at, Sam. You know what? We invert the standings. Instead of looking at first place by record, we look at first place by worst record. We've been here before. It's just lottery ball counting right now and looking at the youth here in Kingsland.
I know, guys, and I hate it. I tweeted about it last night. You know, whether it's the Kings or the Lakers or the Suns, you know, or any of these teams, I know it's never great to complain about things in sports and not come with the definite solution. So I don't know what the solution is. The NBA has pondered possibilities, you know, for quite some time, but it drives me nuts this time of year when you have, you know, young teams that are trying to rebuild like the Kings. You know, last night I was watching Lakers-Suns, and it was a fun game, and I was thinking to myself, like, you know, D'Angelo Russell played really well. Some of those other guys had good games. Like, they deserve to go beat Phoenix and to go to bed that night feeling pretty good about it instead of what probably happened, which is they looked at Twitter and probably had fans going, hey, way to go, buddy. You messed up the draft pick. You know, like that aspect of it is unfortunate. But, you know, Kings fans are not alone. There's a lot of teams right now just kind of watching how the ping pong balls are going to fall.
All right, Sam, we're going to solve this right now on the air. This idea has in parts been floated around before, but I want to go completely in depth here real quick. So Quick answer, top of your head, this is completely unfair, but if you are the president of the Players Association, I know they just got a new CBA, but you want something from the owners. You know, you already have guaranteed contracts. You have a ton of stuff. I don't know. Would like doing away with marijuana testing? I'm trying to think of something the players want from the owners throughout the years that the owners aren't willing to give. Is there anything off the top of your head you can think of that would move the needle there?
I mean, the easiest one is BRI split, the basketball-related income. You know, if you give the players another percentage point or two, I'm sure, you know, that would be on the top of the list. As much as, you know, some of them might enjoy cannabis. I love how you reached for that first. That was great, Dave.
Okay.
But yeah, BRI. Let's go BRI.
Let's go BRI. So here's what you do. You take you take the top eight, or I should say bottom eight teams. All right. You get a rotating neutral site every single year, or hell, just put it in Seattle. And you have an alternate NCAA one-off tournament between the top eight teams. You sign a TV contract and you sell that as a package. You use the income from that and you split it very generously with the players. And then what you do is you have this one-off tournament. You seed them inversely based on where they finish in the bottom eight. And however that tournament finishes out, and of course you have a consolation bracket, that's how you seed your lottery picks. So in other words, you have an opportunity, if you're one of the eight worst teams, to enter the tournament. Should you win the tournament, you just won the number one pick in the draft. Everybody wins. The tanking thing goes away to a point. You always have a little bit of tanking. The fans win because they get a separate tournament that's scheduled alternate to the NBA playoffs, and it keeps fans of teams that are out of it in the NBA longer. Why not just do that?
So how many additional games do you think we're talking about here? Because that's the biggest thing. These guys are already complaining about too many games. And granted, if you make the playoffs, you're going to be playing extra games anyway.
That's exactly right. So you've got what is it, 14 teams that don't finish in the playoffs, is it? So you've got six teams that wouldn't factor in there whatsoever. So you have eight. It's an eight-man tournament. It's a one-off. So first round, you're going to have four games. Second round, you'll have two. Third, you'll have one. So that right there, you could play a max of seven games. Add in your consolation games, and let's say everybody's going to play somewhere between three and seven games. Plus the players, the further they advance, not only are they going to get a bigger cut of the pool, you make it real money for these guys, but they're also going to get a better pick to help their team in the offseason, which is helpful if you've got a multi-year contract and you know you're sticking with the team, so there's got to be a tiny bit of motivation there.
Yeah, no, I like it. I mean, you know, I can't poke any immediate holes in that idea.
Call Adam Silver.
How about this? Wouldn't guys want to tank that tournament, though, because they don't want some high draft pick to come take their spot on a crappy team?
Ooh. There's that, too. There is that. You know, you've got the selfish competitiveness that could come into play. I don't even think it's that much of a priority for the players. I feel like players, it's not that they're not aware of this dynamic, but they, you know, it obviously has not been a pressing enough issue for them to put it in the middle of the table during the CBA negotiations that just finished. But I feel like every year it sneaks up on us. Like it's this time of year when, you know, it just changes the way that 60% of the games that are being played right now are perceived. You know what I mean? Like you turn it on and I hate the fact the fan, you know, listen, the longer I do this, you got to make sure you keep the fan part of you, right? Like I enjoy basketball. So the fan part of me turns on the television and I hate the fact that it's like, you know, oh, it's this team against that team. All right. I'm not really watching just a straight up sporting competition. I'm watching something that has three layers to it. And I'm not sure what I want to happen here. You know, it's all very emotionally confusing.
Sam, it seems like it's been so long really in either conference since there's been a challenger to whoever LeBron's on, or in this case, the Warriors for a couple of years. But now here you've got the Spurs. They're jumping right down the Warriors' throats without Kevin Durant. And then on the East side, Boston and Washington are both within a couple of games of Cleveland for that top spot, and Cleveland seems to be struggling. Are we not giving, let's say, Boston and Washington the biggest examples? Are we not giving them enough credit for being contenders this year?
I feel like we are, but I mean, you know, they keep pushing the envelope and they keep making it more of a story. And so the Wizards certainly need to come in and take care of the Kings tonight. And I was at the Warriors game the other night when Boston took care of Golden State in pretty impressive fashion. So they are both pushing, you know, and Toronto's not dead. They're going to get Kyle Lowry back, you know, from that wrist injury. So they're not out of the picture either, but they've certainly faded. The Cleveland thing is wild because, you know, they just can't do anything without LeBron James on the floor. I just read a column from a colleague of ours, Dave McMenamin at ESPN, talking about the Pistons game last night, and it's just crazy. Like, if he rests, they certainly lose. They're like 4-20 when he doesn't play the last couple of years. But last night, you know, he had 9 minutes of rest the entire game, 9 minutes, and they were like a minus 23. And then when he played, they were a plus 18. And so, you know, the Cavs are not finding ways to survive without LeBron. And, you know, what the Wizards and the Celtics have going is very legitimate. You know, Washington in particular has been doing it since the beginning of December, I guess the beginning of the new year, rather. And they have a good thing going. Scotty Brooks has got those guys clicking. John Wall, I think, is you know, if I had to do the power rankings thing on MVP, he's probably like 5 or 6. He's having a great year. And Otto Porter has been a nice surprise, a guy who just knocks down open threes, and Bradley Beal and the rest of them. So, you know, I really like what they have going.
USA Today's Sam Amick joining us on KHDK. You mentioned MVP and John Wall being in the equation. Nate and I were talking earlier in the week, and we thought about maybe inventing a rule that if you average a triple-double for a season, you're, like, automatically the MVP. And if there's two guys, you do a coin flip. Russell Westbrook, to both of us, is the MVP, just, you know, in addition to his numbers, even if you go by the metric of take the guy off the team, how much worse are they? And then, obviously, LeBron James is in the equation, too. But for you, you got Harden, you got Kawhi, you have Russ, and then, of course, LeBron's always hanging around there. Do you have – who are you voting for MVP if the season ends today?
It's honestly – pretty wide open. I've had Harden out front. You know, Kawhi had his MVP moment against Harden the other day, but I also have been kind of trying to remind folks that, you know, in that particular game, it's not like Harden didn't show up. He had a better line than Kawhi, just had a didn't have his a moment like Kawhi had, didn't have a good fourth quarter either. Harden's there. Westbrook is certainly there. LeBron and Kawhi, those are the four to me. You know, and the other guys, it's more just trying to give them some love for the good year that they've had. Isaiah Thomas, John Wall, I think, from there. So those four, Kawhi did not have a good night last night. Again, you know, another kind of MVP-type game against OKC where Russ got the job done and the Thunder win that game, and Russ had a much better night. You know, I think Kawhi was 19-2-2, something like that. So that's the fun part of the MVP race now, especially when these guys – happen to be sized up against one another, is that I think it's going to ebb and flow until the end. The Harden thing, you know, is just combination of how good their team is and that the history that we always talk about with Westbrook and the obvious history of the triple-double average. James is making history too, and we've talked about this on the show before, where, you know, the kinds of numbers he's putting up with, you know, significantly more assists than Russ. And then, you know, what he's doing scoring-wise, and he's nearing a triple-double on his own. You know, and LeBron's in the same category. LeBron's averaging a career-high in assists, and that team just falls apart without him. So it's a fun race. You know, I mean, I think I don't know who I would pick, and I think it's going to be one of those where I'm not going to be filing the votes, you know, with a week to go in the regular season.
Sam Amick with us on KHDK. I read something interesting yesterday, too, Sam, that if Russell Westbrook, for the final 18 games of his season, 17 games of the season now. If,
I heard this, yeah.
Yeah, no stat line in all 18 of those games, he'd have the same season line as LeBron did last year. He's going to set a record in all likelihood for usage rate this year. You know, kind of some advanced stuff there. But when you hear something like that, to you, does that help or hurt his case for MVP?
Which aspect?
The usage rate.
I mean, it doesn't help or hurt. It's just you got to take it into account. I mean, it's not. I don't even think it's that really heady of stuff. It's not that deep analytics. It's you know, if you're playing on the middle school playground and one guy's got the ball all the time, I mean, that's usage rate. that's all it is. So the idea is that the action goes through him the vast majority of the time. And that's why with Harden, you know, it gets tough because last year we saw, like, with the Rockets, they did not have a lot of the pieces they have this year. Like, Harden technically had the chance to kind of do what Russ is doing this year, last year, meaning that his supporting cast was closer to on par with what the Thunder have now. And he just didn't do it. They didn't have a great year. He actually put up very good numbers, but it wasn't an MVP kind of year. This year, you got a guy like Harden who is kind of weaponizing all these supporting pieces and raising everybody up. And they are breaking records when it comes to the three-point game. I mean, I think they may have already passed the mark for most threes shot in a season, or they're getting close. And he's kind of the engine that makes that whole thing go offensively. So it's hard to compare all these. I feel like every single guy has one, at most two, weaknesses that you point to and say, all right, that's going to hurt you. But it all balances out. I mean, Kawhi's defense is fantastic, but he's not a playmaker, which always kind of nags at me. You know, Russ's defense is not great, except the Thunder are pretty good defensively. Like, it's really hard to make heads or tails of, you know, how to judge all this stuff.
Sam Amick with us as we just continue to go back and forth. It's a fascinating topic because this race is so crazy. So for me, Kawhi's out for a couple of things. His numbers, at least offensively, aren't there with Harden or Westbrook. Number two, I think the Spurs have less of a drop than the Rockets or the Thunder if Kawhi Leonard was out for the year. They wouldn't be as good, but I think he's got a better supporting cast. Now, with Westbrook, you lost Durant, a top three player in the league. You don't have Serge Ibaka anymore. Now, he's lost a lot of talent around him. And now you have the Oklahoma City Thunder sitting in the sixth spot, and that's probably where they'll stay. Well, they're tied with the Grizzlies, so six or seven. And then the triple-double on top of that, and then his PER on top of that. Sam, I can't wrap my head around the fact, even with James Harden, that Russell Westbrook, all things considered, is not more of a clear-cut MVP here for those reasons.
Well, keep talking, but just so I can, I didn't know where you're going to dive deep on the numbers. I'm trying to sit here and log on and,
okay, all right,
and go tit for tat here, buddy.
I'm telling you, all right, so Russell's averaging 32 points a game, which one guy has done in the last 10 years, and that's his former teammate, Kevin Durant. Okay, last guy was like Kobe Bryant, I think. He's going 32 to 29 for James Harden scoring. Assists, 10.1 for Westbrook, 11.2 for Harden. Rebounds, 10.5 for Westbrook, and 7.9. And then your PER, 30.2 to 27.6. Then you take into account what Westbrook lost.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. Although, to his GM's credit, they had a hell of a trade deadline. So he's got a little help now. I mean, Doug McDermott and Taj Gibson have fit in really nicely. And he did lose a lot, but they've drafted extremely well. And Steven Adams and Enes Kanter are very good players. And Victor Oladipo was another guy that you know, they traded for last year, and they thought that was going to help Kevin Durant stay. But Victor's another good young talent. So I think the idea of, you know, Russ on an island just making chicken soup out of you-know-what is a little bit flawed. But, I mean, you make a good argument. I just think, you know, and this is not the only argument against, but it's good that they're sneaking up to sixth. It'd be great if they could sneak up to fifth, because voters are prone to feeling the pressure of history, and history tells us that you can't be MVP when you're in the bottom half of the conference standings. That's traditionally not what has happened. Doesn't mean it couldn't happen this year. And it, you know, and he is, you know, like a night like last night is him taking advantage of the moment and trying to go out and win that MVP award. Well, the four straight losses that preceded that don't help. You know, it's going to make the numbers hollow, especially when some of the local media, and I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, and I mean local in Oklahoma City, you know, we're all kind of guilty of, we yield to the local media in each respective market and the tone that they set in coverage. Well, there's some folks in OKC who appreciate what Russ is doing, but they also will quietly tell you, like, man, it's absurd how much he's chasing these triple doubles, you know. And I always kind of get defensive for him, like, whatever, the record's tremendous when he has a triple double, so who cares? So I know that's nitpicking at the highest order, but you know, I think the winning is something to watch from now until the end. They need to win games. If they are the seventh seed, I don't think he's going to be the MVP.
Sam Amick of USA Today joining us. You think Sam Presti ever sits at home in front of a fire with a bottle of Everclear and wonders what the world would be like if he had a team that had Durant, Harden, Westbrook, and Serge Ibaka?
I don't, for one, because he's about as straight and narrow dude he's ever going to find. So he's not touching the Everclear, first right. of all. I swear to God, guys, one of my favorite experiences of this job is occasionally visiting with Sam Presti in his office in Oklahoma City. You remember the old Russell Crowe movie, Beautiful Mind?
Yes.
Like, I swear to God, like it's a Russell Crowe office.
Wow.
He's behind him. It's unbelievable. I've told Sam this. You sit and he won't let, like, it's kind of been written, but you're definitely not allowed to take pictures and there's no video. He sits in his office and behind him on the wall are, I'm going to handicap it at like 800 or 900 different motivational words that are like almost like little magnets that you would put on a fridge. And so you sit there and you try to have a conversation with him and you can't even focus on what he's saying because behind him is nothing but an entire dictionary of like inspiration. So he's a different kind of cat and he's a smart guy who has done well. And I don't think he looks backwards. He would sit there and, you know, and tell you why the James Harden thing had to happen. And still, I think to this day, he believes that's the case. And then Ibaka, you know, listen, Serge is a funny one because for one, and it's not really even, I'm not even being sarcastic, like around the league for years and years, it's been like, all right, well, they say he's 29, but he's probably 35, you know, like
right.
he, you know, he was at a stage of his life and his career where I think it felt like it was diminishing returns. He wasn't the same guy. So, but you know, one of these days somebody should write a book about the kind of the what if scenario in OKC, because you're talking about the best guys in the league all in one place at one time. And obviously it wasn't to be.
That book should happen. Good thing you're a professional writer, Sam Amick, USA Today. It's a forthcoming book, The Thunder, What Could Have Been, available yes. at all Amazon locations near
the
you.
The Thunder Went Under.
The Thunder Went Under. There you go. See, I was doing it on the fly. Sam has an article out right now talking about the Golden State Warriors. Now, life ain't so great without Kevin Durant. This is ahead of their clash this weekend against the Spurs. Always a blast, my friend.
Thank you, boys.
Thank
have
you.
A great day.
All right,
thanks,
take
Sam.
Care, buddy. That is Sam Amick. We'll take a break. We still got a lot of stuff to cover, including some giveaways for you. And here's the big tease. Will Darren Collison join us after the break? Find wow. out in just 4 minutes right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. Sammy Hagar fans, listen up. End of the segment. We'll let you know when to call. And if you're the right caller, you got a pair of tickets to see Sammy Hagar in the Circle, Lake Tahoe this summer, July. Perfect time to be in Tahoe. Perfect time to see Sammy right now joining us. The point guard for your Sacramento Kings, our good friend from UCLA, Darren Collison. Hey, Darren, it's Dave and Nate. How are you?
Good. Good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing good. I'm sure you're happy to be home at least for a little bit. You take on the Wizards tonight. I'm just going to start with a general question because we haven't talked to you in a couple weeks. It's been a pretty crazy couple weeks since the All-Star game, a different look for the team. How are you doing, and how's the locker room doing?
You know, I think, that's a fair question. I think the locker room is doing good.
People adjusting.
A little more.
Oh, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we lost you. I thought that was the shortest answer ever, but we lost you. I lost you at the locker room is doing good.
Yeah, and I just feel like if we could win some games that give us a little bit more momentum going into the next game and give us some confidence, you know, knowing that we can play with this group. We haven't had a lot of time to play with this group. We had about two practices, you know, since the All-Star break, and, you know, slowly but surely we're still trying to come together.
You know, Darren, you know, not to take anything away from DeMarcus, because when you got a guy with that offensive talent, he's going to get the ball a lot. But now that there are more opportunities out there, you like what you're seeing from guys, how they've kind of picked up the slack offensively. I mean, obviously the wins and losses haven't panned out the way you'd like, but are you pleased with the way that people have kind of started to pick up the load as a team?
The potential of the young guys like Scal, who's coming into his own. Buddy Hill is definitely playing well. He's been playing well even before the All-Star break. Tyreek, you know, he's another guy that's continuing to contribute for us. And then Willie Cauley-Stein is a guy that's been taken it to another level, you know, since the break. So it's definitely fun to see the guys that you can finally see they're coming to their own.
Darren, there's a lot of stuff. You know, this team next year may not look much like the team this year, at least if you look at seasons past. And I know at the beginning of the year we approached this and we've stayed away from it. But as we get into the end of the season, I want to ask you, you have a big decision to make this summer. You're a free agent. And we're certainly not asking you to make a decision right now. But I am curious from your own point of view, how much of your decision do you think is going to be just to be quite frank, money? What's best for you and taking care of your family? And how much does the status of the team and being a playoff contender factor in for you?
I think all of the above. Yeah. You know, I think at this point in my career, you know, I really want to get back to that playoff feel. You know, I want to continue to compete, you know, for a playoff team and, you know, eventually try to win a championship in my career. But, however, I do understand that, you know, this team is trying to have that same goal. They may not do it within a year or two. And, you know, if I end up coming back and we have a young team and that team is at the playoffs, why not? You know, I just think that's where my success lies here too. You know, a lot of players, their success lies with, you know, winning a championship. You know, I have kind of like two goals for my career, you know, helping Sacramento because they haven't been to the playoffs in a while and eventually trying to win a championship for our team. So either way, it depends on what the team has next year, next summer, and that's going to all factor that in. But I'm definitely not afraid to come back.
Darren Collison's with us on The Drive. You had mentioned just a little bit ago watching young guys develop over the course of time, especially throughout the end of this season. You know, when you look at tonight's opponent, John Wall is a guy that he was obviously very highly touted coming into the league, and he's been successful, but it's been kind of a slow ride for him just in terms of finding his footing as a leader on a winning team. Now they're being very successful. He's having a huge season. When you watch a guy like that, and essentially the last couple of years, you've got to watch his progression two games at a time, right? What have you seen in that time? Are you surprised on a year-to-year basis when a guy's able to kind of just make leaps like that? Do you see him on yearly and say, wow, this guy, man, he's really put it together?
Yeah, I think it takes time for other guys, you know, in the league, you know, to progress at a high level. Some guys, they do it right away. Some guys, it takes them a while. But you know, I think John Wall's been the guy that he's always been playing at a high level. It was just his team had to follow him and get some wins. So now he's able to put both together. He's playing at a high level. The team is playing at a high level. They got a good coaching staff. They got good players around him and Bradley Beal, who I think is an all-star himself. So I think he's in a great place right now, and I think they have a shot to make a run in the Eastern Conference. They're definitely a stronger team than they were in the previous year. They have a really good team now, so they're definitely ready.
Darren Collison joining us on KHTK. I want to ask your scouting opinion here. You know a little bit about UCLA basketball, and I don't know if the Kings are going to have a shot at him. He's probably going to be gone before the Kings get a piece of him. Talk to us a little bit about what you know with Lonzo Ball. And then a guy they may have a shot at is TJ Leaf. I know that Vlade and Peja were just watching him, I believe, yesterday. What do you know about those two cats?
Both players are exciting. Both players can definitely help a team now. I think whatever team they decide to go to, that team is going to be very happy to have them. Lonzo's a unique player. He's one of those big guards that can pretty much do everything. He can shoot, dribble, pass. You know, he's kind of like a jack-of-all-trades himself. And then TJ Leaf, who I saw a little bit yesterday myself for the first time, you know, I haven't really paid attention to him because, you know, everybody's been talking about Ball. But when I got a chance to watch UCLA play UFC last night, he's a guy that can take you out the dribble, shoot, and do a little bit of things. And he can probably play the three and the four. So I think they're in a great position right now. They're going to definitely help a team out, and they're a reason why UCLA is having so much success.
Darren Collison joining us. Darren, last question for you, and I ask you because you've always been a straight shooter with us and had no problem talking about anything we ask you. You know, you had a very rough and complicated start to the season for reasons that have been well documented, and the Kings and the fans stood behind you, and you've had yourself a pretty damn good year. And now you have a teammate who's been in the news, who obviously has some off-court issues he's dealing with. One of the things that was said during the Cousins trade was about culture and character. And I'm curious, from a player standpoint and from a locker room standpoint, people are saying, oh, cut this guy, get rid of this guy, and maybe you understand that. But from a player's perspective, how important is it, or does it make a difference when the team stands behind one of your teammates? Is that something that reverberates in the locker room?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, we all have family members. You know, it was your brother, sister, son, daughter, cousins, uncles, you know, that had some type of legal situation and they've been in trouble with something. You know what I mean? Nobody's having a perfect life. And, you know, you're still going to stand behind your family member. You know, you're going to still let them know that you love them, you know, that you're there for them. To me, I think it's better to give them that support and love because it'll help them get through whatever times they're going through and changes to help to make themselves. You know, if you kind of withdraw your way away from them and they're going through those tough times, they may act the same way. You know what I mean? So I always felt like love and support would definitely help somebody get through their situation better, as the fans did for me and everybody else. So I know Vladdy's trying to change the culture, which is a good sign. But, you know, we all have to be realistic. You know, this is the real world with the real life, and nobody's going to live a perfect life. But, you know, when you do make a mistake, you know, you just got to help that person get through it, show them that support and love, and eventually they won't make that mistake no more. But I don't feel like you should just turn your back on that individual.
Always appreciate you, Darren. The Kings and Wizards tonight, 7:30 coverage right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. The odds makers say the Kings are underdogs by 8. Why don't you slap them in the face tonight, and good luck.
Yeah, we haven't got along with those odd makers, so it's all good.
All right, my man. Have a great night tonight. Play well. Thank you.
All right. No worries.
All right. That is Darren Collison. You know, I like him as a radio guest. We've had many players over the years on the air, and I won't mention any, but some just, you know, it's canned answer after canned answer, and that's fine. I get it. Darren's a guy that you can pretty much – I don't think he's dodged a question.
No.
And not only does he not dodge it, but you feel like you're getting – whether you agree with the answer or not, that's irrelevant, that you're getting an answer that's from the heart, and I appreciate that. Sammy Hagar, that's what you hear right now. 11th caller, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Be the 11th caller. You're going to see Sammy in Tahoe in July. We're back in 3 minutes to finish the show and finish the week on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK. Yow! All right, final segment of the week for The Drive. Dave and Nate, Katie off today. Not really. We sent her home sick earlier.
Ill.
Yes.
Katie's ill.
If you're wondering, does everybody on this show get sick for the last 2 months? The answer is yes, they do. Uh-huh. We're trying to avoid that. Nate, you're a GM. You have a top three pick in the draft. Right now, many mock drafts have Josh Jackson, the small forward from Kansas, going number 3 to
that
the
draft.
Phoenix Suns. Yes, that draft. We're switching to NBA real quick. according to a report, an attorney for Josh Jackson tried to pay the family of a Jayhawks women's basketball player so she wouldn't press charges stemming from a December incident when he allegedly damaged the woman's car. That's according to her father, Tim Calvert, the father of Kansas sophomore Mackenzie Calvert, told the Kansas City Star that Jackson's lawyer told the family, money is no object within reason. If they would let
that's a good place to start.
Yeah, exactly. If they'd let it go, quote, they wanted to pay to make it all go away, but it wouldn't have gone away for my daughter. It would have been great for Josh, not for Mackenzie. This was never about money to me. It was about how my daughter was treated. Jackson allegedly kicked Mackenzie Calvert's car, causing up to $1,000 worth of damage outside a Lawrence, Kansas bar December 9th following an altercation in which she threw a drink, again, allegedly, at a friend of Jackson's. Does that dramatically alter your look at him as far as draft stock, or do you move on from it?
Well, I mean, it sounds like he's kind of been a bit of a troublemaker anyway, but you're going to have to help me out here. Because honestly, I'm trying to find – they got in an altercation at a bar,
yeah,
and he wrecked her car, basically,
yes,
right? I mean, if he's willing to pay for it, I guess I'm having trouble understanding. Like, it's not to excuse, like, being a jerk or, like, wrecking someone's car. But I guess if, like, do you want to see him held in jail for it? Or would you rather just have your car paid for? I guess I'm having, I get that there's, like, a moral gray area there.
I guess she wanted both. She wanted the car damage done, but she also wanted criminal charges filed against him for assaulting her vehicle.
Okay. I mean, maybe I just don't know that much about this, but right. It seems like ultimately that's where it would end up, is him paying for damages. So I guess I don't see anything too wrong. And again, unless there's some major detail I'm missing, I don't see anything wrong with him being like, dude, just can we just settle on this, please, and get it over with?
Yeah, it's when he was just in Kansas, lost yesterday in the first round of their tournament to TCU. No team has ever lost in the first round of their tournament and gone on to win the national championship, and Jackson was held out of that game for disciplinary reasons as well. It's very, you got a very talented player in Josh Jackson, but not the time to be screwing up. Well, there's never a time to be screwing up, but not the time to be screwing up right before the draft. Here's what we've been covering today. So Kirk Cousins signs his franchise tender, and everyone's freaking out. I'm not talking about us. We got to mention it, especially with the Niner connection. But, you know, you look at ESPN and everywhere else, it's big red banner, breaking news. He signs the franchise tag. Well, what was that not? I mean,
I think it was there.
Yeah.
They're so good at that. But, I mean, you remember a couple of years ago, like, what they're able to generate entire news cycles just by having the stable of names that they have. I mean, you remember a couple of years ago, you got about a week's worth of media stories from Ron Jaworski saying that Colin Kaepernick has a potential to be the greatest quarterback ever.
Yes.
He says that. So you get one of their other outlets picking it up saying, well, Ron Jaworski says, then they debate it for 3 hours and it goes on to the next show, which means that outside outlets start picking that up. Well, listen to this guy, how full of crap he is. I mean, right. Ron Jaworski, who's that? And before you know it, again, a week of, well, Ron Jaworski says this, they get to run. I mean, it's the perfect content mill.
It is interesting, and now we delve into a deep conversation into how media works this day. These
I mean,
days.
How often? I'm sorry, because I do want to get into it, but how often do you see stuff like sources and ESPN's Adam Schefter reporting?
Right.
Which means Adam Schefter didn't have it first. They're screwing someone else over.
Exactly, and you're not naming the sources that it should be USA Today's Sam Amick reports and
confirmed by Adam Schefter or Mark Stein in this case.
If you watch any sort of news, cable news, for example, the term breaking news used to actually mean like, oh my God, breaking news. There was
one I remember, TWA Flight 800.
Breaking news, yep. And a big banner. If you watch an hour of cable news these days, which first off, you got to be bored. But if you do that, every time they come back from break, 9 times out of 10, all right, we're monitoring breaking news right now. FBI Director James Comey is at the state capitol right now, meeting on Russian time. Well, I mean, I guess technically it's breaking news, but it's not like, oh my God, James Comey's at the capitol.
Right. When, like, how do you define breaking? When is a story broke?
See, for right? Well, broken news. We covered it yesterday. I mean, for me, breaking news.
You should do that as a segment, broken news.
Seriously. Breaking news is Kirk Cousins has been traded. Mm-hmm. Breaking news is Tom Brady has retired. Breaking news is, at worst, Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez are getting married.
See, here you've got this at ESPN's Adam Schefter reports Kirk Cousins signed. No, Kirk Cousins' agent put that out on Twitter.
Right. But you've got to, you are the brand, and you're branding your personalities, and you've got to credit them for the break, because now, oh my God, Adam Schefter, he knows things. I better follow him on Twitter. I better watch when he, and not that Adam Schefter's not a phenomenal NFL reporter. Of course he is. Just interesting how it's not just news media. Obviously, we're talking about sports media. It's just amazing how things are shifted now to get people riled up.
Right. Sports media is a lot like cheap beer, whereas really it's about the packaging.
Are you
it's
saying about that because there's a cheap beer commercial on the monitor?
Actually, I was thinking about that before. But they say that like a lot of those domestic beers and stuff, in a blind taste test, a lot of people can't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. What makes the difference is the marketing, whether it's champagne of beers or cold activated labels or, you know, whatever it might be. It's the marketing that gets people brand loyalty, and sports media isn't that different. ESPN, they're the dude. And, like, they've gotten to a point where they've got such a reputation now. 70% of what they have to do, if not more, is just profile management.
Yes.
They don't even really have to do anything. They just have to craft their brand in a way that makes it look like they are.
They're taking the NBA 80s and 90s method that David Stern instituted, which we don't brand teams, we brand players. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're doing. Whereas ESPN or wherever it is, Fox, everybody does it now. You're branding your players are your reporters. You're branding your reporters itself.
Fox went and got all the guys that got cut from ESPN.
Right? And I don't know. I mean, I just can't imagine it. I'm not going to lie. It's successful. It's insanely successful. So the temptation when you're in media, you know, we do a morning radio show here in a top 25 market. So there's a temptation, and I've looked at it and gone, God, you know, should we come back from every other – monitoring breaking news right now,
right.
Here at KHDK, Kirk Cousins has – as my phone rings. You know, shut up. We're monitoring breaking news, this, that, whatever. Oh, okay, breaking news. Alden Smith was – you couldn't do that. And I'm going to be very transparent. If we did that, although it would annoy regular listeners to the show that know who we are, your numbers are going to go up.
They might.
I just couldn't live like that.
But that I couldn't either. And that's kind of the big question right now, though, too, is whether that's actually effective or whether ESPN had success with that because they had the brand. Because
yeah,
they've
true.
Been hemorrhaging subscribers and ratings for a long time now. They've been hemorrhaging talent and money. But they're still true. The mothership.
They're the mouse ears. speaking of the mothership, hopefully Katie will be all rested and ready to go on Monday. We'll be full strength. I don't think anybody's got a vacation coming up. Hopefully nobody gets sick, knock on wood. Uh-huh. For Kevin Sharitz, the executive producer of the program, Matt George, your technical director. Yep, I just
Is
gave
that
you that
nice?
Title. Yeah, it's a nice title. Nate Goodyear, and we'll even thank Katie. She was in here for an hour. It's Carmichael Dave. We'll see you on Monday, bright and early at 6 a.m. You got Jim Rome next, the lowdown, and, of course, Grant and Doug, 3 to 7. Stay tuned for the KHDK family today right here on your home of the Kings at Sports 1140 KHDK.